wondering, have you ever tried on a pair of these smart glasses? So they basically integrate technology with a range of hands-free features like audio, cameras, and digital screens. And they are very much at the center of this debate around privacy concerns, given that they do give the user an ability to record covertly, which means without someone's consent, if you're wearing these glasses, you can actually be recording a conversation or recording whatever it is that you're seeing. But there's another part to this conversation, and that is about the opportunity that these kinds of glasses might give to assist those people who are living with a disability. The government's latest on this, and this is in relation to the privacy reforms that they launched yesterday, they're now saying they're not currently considering an import ban on the glasses, but they could be restricted by local councils. Françoise Jacobs is from Blind Citizens Australia, a national organisation of people who are blind or vision impaired. Françoise, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Carly, thanks for having me and thanks for raising this really important conversation.
Look, we were really struck, Francois, when we were speaking about it as a team yesterday. One of the producers was saying he has a business partner who's sight impaired and he relies very heavily on these glasses, and it was something that the rest of us weren't aware of, and that's part of the reason why we reached out to you today. So thank you so much for making the time to talk to us. Help me to understand, though, Francois, how these glasses can be helpful for people who are blind or vision impaired.
Yeah, thanks. You know, it's not often that I agree with government statements necessarily, but this morning I think the Attorney General said that people shouldn't have to choose between protecting their privacy and participating in the digital economy. And I would take that further by replacing the digital economy argument with exactly that, also just participating and being able to live independently as a person with disability. So to answer your question, how we use them, oh my goodness, navigation. Because you wear them, it means that your hands are free. I'm also a dog guide user. So imagine I'm on the train and one day I might have just nodded off a little bit and I got off on the wrong station. It's true. And I got my dog out and she will always keep me safe and like not let me fall on the tracks or walk into something, but neither of us knew where to go. So you use the glasses, get somebody on remote visual assistance who can tell me where's the exit, where's the street corners, and even there's paid services that we can use where they can integrate maps and they can look at the street maps and explain to you how to independently navigate an unfamiliar environment. And that is so important, to not have to necessarily pay a support worker to go about your daily life, sometimes unplanned, which anybody does unplanned things. And these smart glasses enable us to do just that.
No, I can see what a massive difference that would make, Francois. But does that mean that these external operators are able to access whatever it is your glasses are revealing, and that's how they're able to guide you?
Yes, it's a contracted, they are like, it's a closed system where people, especially trained visual interpreters, they can help with things like that. But the smart glasses can do much more than that. They can also, just using the onboard artificial intelligence, they can identify objects and things. Like if I'm cooking a pasta sauce and I'm picking up a tin, I really don't want to put in the peaches in the pasta sauce. So you just use the glasses.
Francois, you can also use them, for example, if you go to a cafe and there's a menu there, you could use the glasses to read the menu to you, for example.
Absolutely that. Okay. It is a game changer, honestly. And that's why it's so important to understand the difference between people using it for terrible surreptitious reasons of filming like this old rizzing phenomenon, as opposed to the way we use it. People with disability use it for accessibility.
So do you think then when it comes to regulation, then it's about striking a balance between those concerns that you articulate, but also the opportunities, the very valuable contribution that the technology can make for people who are vision impaired?
We absolutely support regulations. We feel that it's needed. I don't think there's disagreement there. We also have women who are blind or vision impaired who feel particularly vulnerable to the same things that happen to anybody else in public. But those regulations really have to be flexible enough to accommodate these emerging technologies that really give us this independence. The way we use it is so different from the way that sadly is caused this whole public outcry, yeah.
And also presumably, I guess one of the main differences, Françoise, would be that you would be using them in an overt, visible, publicly recognisable way. I mean, I think that so much of the concern seems to be about them being used surreptitiously without consent, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we have Australian standards for products. Like, if you can remember the electric vehicles, there's this automated vehicle alerting systems, which is now required in Australia. If a vehicle is stationary or quiet, it emits a sound.
Yes.
That's a built-in mandatory thing. So again, that's where I support the eSafety Commissioner, where they say that these devices need to have a requirement that they cannot take a video without the light being visible. And I believe that is, in some devices, that is possible. That is how they are built. But there are, sadly, some others currently where you can take the video even if the light is covered, which is what nobody wants.
Françoise, it feels as though the federal government might be slightly hedging its bets on this issue at this stage. There's talk about potential restriction from local councils or even individual businesses to regulate. That, I'd imagine, would present a whole other range of challenges potentially to someone who is using them as a kind of disability aid, in the sense that then does that mean that if you go into a particular business, you're not able to use them, or you can only use them if you're carrying a license that, you know, that proves that you need them?
Yeah, that is a concern. Again, that's why we're asking that councils and government please consult with us, talk to us. We don't want a situation where unintentionally people are basically excluded just because we didn't know about something. And that's why we're speaking up. So now you know. So you can't you can't anymore just do these things not knowing how it impacts us. If I go to a public pool and I don't want to fall into the pool without choosing to. So I want my glasses to tell me where the pool is. So I understand that for most people, you don't want to see somebody with glasses who's filming you. So that's why the public awareness part of it is so important, to understand when people with disability use it for accessibility, for safety, for inclusion, not for spying on people.
Yeah, 100%. Françoise, how widely used are these among people who are blind or vision impaired? Are they fairly commonplace now?
I think 2 years ago it was not much more than a toy.
Yeah.
Like it could do something, and then it got something. Like I was talking about the tin of peaches, and it told me it was like tomatoes once. And I thought, honestly, are we going to spend all this money on it? It improved dramatically all the time. In the American fall, which is now, there could most likely come a new version where we can have consistent visual interpreting, where it tells me how I'm approaching the exit of the train platform or whatever. So this is really a game changer for us, and our community is really embracing it and seeing the value, how it makes us more independent in ways that nobody could think of before.
I'm wondering if you mentioned earlier that you're a dog guide user.
Yes.
How would you rate this technology in terms of the assistance that it can offer someone who is blind or vision impaired? Can you see it becoming as critical a tool, for example, as a dog guide?
Firstly, these two are not mutually exclusive.
No.
You will never just wear glasses.
Yes. Yes.
I think, it is complementary, and it obviously depends on who knows how artificial intelligence will develop and how That's again, we need the rules and regulations to ensure that people use these tools correctly. But I really think this is potentially a real, real game changer in how visual interpreting can be delivered to us more quickly and more regularly ongoing, that you don't have to ask the thing every 50 meters for where am I now, where am I now. It should just like a, it's getting closer to the state where to almost act like a sighted person who would tell you about things that are changing as you're walking past.
Francois, thank you so much for talking to us today. That's been really fascinating and interesting. I've learned so much about the way in which those glasses, these glasses, which have kind of become, you know, a source of real concern and criticism within public policy. But to hear the advantages that it offers to people like yourself and other people who are blind or vision impaired, it's really important. So we appreciate your time.
Yeah, I really think we need to fix what is harmful and protect what is essential. So thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. That's Francois Jacobs, who's from Blind Citizens Australia, talking there about these glasses, these smart glasses, and how helpful they can be to people who are blind or vision impaired. This is a much more complicated thing to regulate, it seems to me, than we might first have thought. On ABC News.